Hello, everyone. Welcome to the latest episode of Tech Stack. Today, we have a lot to talk about. On this latest episode, we're going to talk about Intel and the latest controversy surrounding its CEO. Hello, everyone. Welcome back to Tech Stack. I am Marco Cipetta, Principal Analyst at Hot Tech Vision and Analysis. And I am joined by my partner, Dave Altavilla. And we have Mark Vina from Smart Tech Research and Jim McGregor from Tyrius Research. How's everybody doing this week?
Great.
Fantastic. Yeah. It's Friday.
Not exactly. Really, because the Yankees are still in trouble. I mean, come on.
That's why I'm even more fantastic.
Dave, I knew you would be.
So what was everybody up to this week? I know, Jim, you're just getting off an airplane, right? What was up?
I'm in between airplanes. So I was at FMS, which used to be the Flash Memory Summit. But now it's the Future of Memory and Storage Summit. I always get confused because they keep changing the names. But really interesting stuff. And we're going to talk about that on a future Tech Stack. And I'm going to the Technology Leadership Forum this weekend. So I'll be with some of the Wall Street folks this weekend.
Ooh, very nice. Very nice. And how about you, Mark? What are you up to?
This week was writing coverage this week. There is a big, I won't say who they are, but I was briefed on a big product announcement activity in the PC space. It'll happen in about 9 days. I'm not going to say who it was, but that was some very cool, interesting stuff there.
Gotcha. Very cool. How about you, Dave? What are you up to?
Yeah, kind of the opposite of Mark. Actually have been doing a ton of testing on hardware lately. But also, actually, I shouldn't say that. I did do a little bit of announcement digestion and maybe even feedback session with some big announcements in the PC space that are coming up as well. So, yeah, fun stuff going on. Never a dull moment. How about you? What have you been up to, knucklehead?
Working on a bunch of embargoed stuff. I can actually show this. It's even
show some goodies. Review.
I'm like, I can't even lift it. That's like a big, monstrous, beautiful GPU that I'm working
on. Oh, wow.
But also have a couple of projects in-house. Case study on productivity with external monitors and stuff like that. Right. That is not published yet, though, and I'm not sure how much we can talk about it.
We don't want to have to, you know, make somebody disappear, that's for sure.
Exactly. So, but I digress. Really crazy few days regarding Intel. We have news of potential tariffs, and then we had Trump on the Truth Social say there is no other solution but to have Lip-Bu-Tan resign from Intel due to potential ties to, you know, communist entities inside China. This was really, you know, leading the news yesterday. Intel and Lip-Bu have responded directly. Kind of a volatile situation. We have lots of opinions here at Tech Stack. I think I'm going to start with my partner, Dave. Dave, what's your, you know, high level takeaway from what's transpired the last couple of days?
Where do I begin? I'll try and keep this as brief as possible, but there's a lot to unpack, and you know, we should really dig into some of these. But you know, Trump's a rather vocal fellow, as we all know, and so you know, when he sees something, he's gonna point to it, and that's nothing new. But let's think about this through a little bit. And Tan had been on the board of directors for Intel for years, right? The BOD must have vetted him, must have known about this situation as well with Cadence and their ongoing litigation with the DOJ. And they must have known about it. They must have vetted him because this investigation from the DOJ of Cadence started back in 2021, I think. And so they must have thought, okay, this isn't too much of a quagmire that we have to worry about. You know, there's nothing to see here. And if the DOJ, you have to think about it this way too, the DOJ likes nothing better than to absolutely light up an individual in these kinds of situation, in any situation. If they can make somebody an example, they will. And they didn't. if they thought he was culpable, he would have been part of the charges, right? So for me, it's there's a lot of where there's smoke, is there fire? I don't know. I don't think so. You know, I think what has been investigated by the DOJ and what's on record, it's a public record, the court documents with the case for Cadence. What's already been investigated in all this, you know, all these questions that are being posed by Cotton, Senator Cotton, I think it's already known. So, you know, I'm less concerned about it. I think more of what Intel does to react to it is what's key in the days ahead. Mm. And I think their internal memo, I'll let somebody else handle that, could have been a little
new. Yeah, I think I'm pretty much on the same page as you, Dave. And for those that are unfamiliar with how this all unfolded, recently Cadence pled guilty to the charges brought forth by the DOJ. And that seemed to trigger this whole conversation. At least that seemed to be the trigger for Senator Cotton to put out his letter calling out Intel and Lip-Bu. Let's go to Mark. Mark, what's your take on how this is all playing out right now?
Yeah, I think it's obviously turning into an unnecessary soap opera now for Intel. I mean, they don't need this agita, to use an Italian word, right now. But I have a couple of thoughts on this. Is that, you know, Dave pointed out that a lot of all this Cadence stuff happened several years ago with a different Department of Justice, which presumably, if they had doubts about LBT, it would have been known and would have been out there, because like Dave said, you know, there's nothing better than a CEO who's they want to chase, and the Justice Department is really good at that. The only thing I would say is that the Department of Justice in 2021 is different from the Justice Department in 2025, different cast of characters. So was there information suppressed? You know, my big concern, which I suspect all of you share, is the Intel board exposed? Because, you know, when you're a board member, and remember, LBT was a member of the Intel board for several years. We'll probably dive into that a little bit later. But the reality is that when you're even a board member for a publicly traded company, they get vetted almost as extensively and as exhaustively as a CEO. So was the board aware of this stuff? And maybe they deemed it, well, you know, maybe there's a little bit of smoke here, but, you know, but it doesn't rise to the level that we wouldn't hire this guy as CEO. So, and I guess the thing I would just close on then before turning over to you guys is that the Wall Street Journal editorial, and the Wall Street Journal carries a lot of weight, you know, when you use the kind of headline they had today, where they basically, you know, really threw Intel under the bus. And they didn't come to LPT's defense. He's an American citizen. There hasn't been any direct smoke yet in terms of what the allegations might be. That did not look good. That was not a good look. Now, they may be skewed. I mean, all boards sometimes gets into fights with their CEOs. That would be the first time it's happened. But I think right now, given even Intel's response after all this stuff happened, you know, I think LBT's got some exposure.
Yeah, we'll see. You know, so a common theme from both you and Dave is, you know, the board had to know, right?
Yeah.
We're speculating, right? They may not have, and I'm totally going off the rails here and speculating. If they didn't know, that's really, really bad. Right. That just does not paint the Intel board in a very good light. I too agree. They really had to know. This is not the kind of thing that you just sweep under the rug. It was public knowledge. The DOJ was out there. I'm also wondering, just to kind of plant another seed to continue the conversation, the previous administration was very high on the CHIPS Act and was kind of, you know, proud to be doling out money to American tech companies to bolster semiconductor manufacturing here in the U.S. The current administration, not so much. And there's, you know, really billions of dollars have involved here. I'm wondering if the amount of money being doled out by the government is sort of weighing on the current administration. Again, totally speculating, may have absolutely nothing to do with it. Dave, you seem like you wanted to jump in, even though it's Jim's turn. Do you want to say something?
It's Jim's turn. I know. We got to get McGregor's opinion on this, because God knows he's full of opinion. But I think you might be on to something there. Trump has been out against the CHIPS Act since day one. He's poo-pooed Intel almost since day one.
Yes.
And I'm not getting political. I don't want to go there. No. But we know there's agendas involved. It's the way it works. And yep. when you got senators and presidents asking for the resignation of a CEO, how do you, you know what I mean? So,
yeah.
Yeah. I think you might have a little something going there, Marco.
Yeah.
And with that, Jim, am I full of it? Sheamus. What do you think?
No, I think you guys are all on the right track. Obviously, Intel is under the microscope. They're under the microscope because there's a lot of entities that are, you know, feeding into Intel, you know, whether it's Wall Street, whether it's the governments, I should say, that are giving Intel money to build future fab capacity and everything else, not to mention relying on them for technology for future defense and government applications. You have customers. I mean, Intel has been under the microscope for quite some time for their earnings, for their stumbles in terms of technology and their products. So part of that, I think, is just Intel being under the microscope in terms of, and I think part of it is just geopolitics, which, you know, that has been evolving for the past, you know, decade. You know, we've seen more and more pushback against China. Although, let's face it, you know, China is a leader. They're a critical part of our industry. We wouldn't exist without China, especially in terms of electronic assembly and device manufacturing and everything else. They have become part of that global ecosystem from raw earth materials all the way through final systems. Matter of fact, I think if somebody's not looking at investing in China or Chinese companies, I think it'd be foolish. I mean, just look at BYD. They're now the largest EV vendor in the world, and they've very quickly surpassed everything that pretty much Tesla is doing at this point in time. Unfortunately, you know, this is the worst possible time for Intel to be going through this. Mm-hmm. With a brand new CEO going through a major, major transition that he's kind of ushering in with all kinds of layoffs, changes in product strategy, and changes in terms of operation. You know, having to make another CEO change right now would be devastating. I think it would basically just leave Intel in no man's land. And I think that's extremely dangerous. And I think it's really hard. And we know this. It's really hard to find a company that can take Intel with a vision to the next level. But it has to be addressed. So how do you address it? Either Lip-Bu has to address the challenges with this perceived conflict of interest, or the board has to, you know, make a transition. What do you guys think?
Well, yeah, I mean, I let me just jump in for one second. I'll say one thing that's kind of interesting. When you look back at history, and Jim, I think you're absolutely right. Intel's got a lot of issues going on right now, a variety of different issues. They've made some bad decisions over the last few years in terms of not getting into certain product categories. We don't have to list them all here. However, if Intel, let's say the shoe was on the other foot and Intel was doing extraordinarily well, you know, history shows that when a company is doing really, really well, exceeding expectations, you know, the board and the company itself will rally around a CEO that's having some problems. And very famously, if you recall years ago, when Jobs came back to Apple, you know, Intel, Apple started to spike up. They had a lot of success with the iPod. They had that big issue around backdating of stock options. And Jobs was absolutely implicated in all of that. He survived that. You know, and whether the government looked the other way, if I'm not mistaken, their CFO took the hit for that, if I recall. But the reality of my point is that if Intel was in a better position right now, he could probably ride this out. But, you know, to Dave's point, the Trump administration is not big fans of the CHIP Act, and we could debate that all day long. But the reality is that even if you take this whole Cadence situation out of the mix, you know, you have an administration right now that's not real thrilled about making these big investments, you know, and they were never thrilled about the CHIP Act. We can debate that separately. But I think right now, if I'm the Intel board, I'm saying to myself, do we need this aggravation? You know, and it really gets down to that kind of thing is that, you know, we're trying to turn the company around and we've got a CEO now that may be saddled with this controversy. So it might be, and I agree with what you said, Jim, it's hard to, we all talked about this. We've talked about this several times. It's really hard to find someone who is capable with the kind of experience you need to run a company like Intel, especially when you're trying to turn the place around.
And so we've seen CEOs get, you know, axed for less, you know, for having an affair with an employee. Matter of fact, that happened at Intel. Yeah, so, you know, not to bring up the past, but, you know, we've seen that. And that that didn't put on as nearly as much heat externally. What we're seeing now.
And the reason I thought Marco's observation was so on point is because if you read between the lines of Cotton's letter to Intel, to the board of directors of Intel, it specifically says, as stewards of you know, taxpayer dollars for the CHIPS Act. It literally says in there, it calls that right out. So that kind of tells you, okay, this is what we're, this is what we're worried about.
Exactly. So I, we definitely have to talk about the responses, the response from Intel and, and from Lip-Bu directly, but Jim brought up a point that I have an opinion on. You know, I think some of the positions that, members of both parties take is this sort of alarmist view on China, right? Yes, they're a superpower. Yes, we have to, you know, be careful in this country and ensure our national interests are being met. But there's so much money changing hands between America and China that I think both sides want to continue the status quo, right? China doesn't want to do anything to hurt its cash cow. And we absolutely need a lot of the products and a lot of the manufacturing capabilities out of China. It's just reality right now. So some of this alarmist point of view and trying to oust the CEO over a potential connection, perhaps it's going a little too far, but that's probably, you know, a totally different discussion. Let's go back to the responses. Like, how do you guys think the current responses, in my opinion, that came out of Intel and directly from Lip-Bu were a little too high level. I don't want to use the word foofy, but it was more about continuing to push America forward, but with no real kind of concrete details to refute some of the allegations that are out there. I'm going to go to Mark first. Mark, what do you think of the current response that has been put out? And what would you have done different, or how do you think it has to evolve in the coming days and weeks?
Yeah, I, you know, my initial reaction was that there's not a lot there. You go so high level and you don't address the accusations in a full-throated way, people are going to assume the worst. Now, having said that, you know, you know these kind of situations, and we've all seen them, that happen at companies where a crisis happens, you got to respond very, very quickly. The president of the United States is directly involved in all of this. And, you know, what are you going to do? And generally speaking, what happens when a corporation rallies around the CEO, if there was absolutely no truth to this, I think they would have been much more outspoken. And I think it's in terms of denying, saying, hey, there's no there. So I was very, very surprised, speaking for myself, that it was too high level. And, you know, when you go down the American apple pie and the American flag, you know, I get a little nervous because we've all been in meetings, especially when we're in meetings or in person, and we know that there's a lot of BS going on. The BS, you know, when you're an analyst, you have a BS detector that's built into your brain. Now, again, I'm not willing to pass judgment completely yet, but I was a bit surprised at how vague it was.
Yeah,
speaking for myself.
No, I totally agree with you. I think they had to respond quickly, so these first responses perhaps not as in-depth. I will say the use of the word misinformation, combating the misinformation, that's going to set half the country off and they're going to be skeptical or whatever comes afterwards in terms of response. But that's neither here nor there. Dave, what do you think of the responses and what would you have done differently, or what do you think Intel has to do moving forward to quell all of this?
Yeah, you know, I think it's a tough slog out of the gate to address this. You got to remember, this is an internal memo that they posted on the newsroom, so they made it an external internal memo, right? Yeah. But it was a letter from Tan to his employees, from the CEO to the employees of Intel. You and I, you know, talked about this probably a little too much before the cast here. I share the same opinion about that word, misinformation. I think that was Intel's way and Lip-Bu's way of saying there's a lot of, you know, a lot of BS in here that I don't agree with, you know, and we're gonna work this out. But he didn't want to get into the weeds. And I think if you do get into the weeds, right? I mean, you're going to get into the weeds with Congress. I mean, you're going to get into the weeds with the government. So why bother getting into the weeds right now in this early phase when you don't even know what you're being accused of completely yet? So I think, you know, I know folks want more, but I don't think they could. It's a tough line to walk to give more.
Yeah, got it. Yeah, totally agreed. Jim, what do you think?
Well, I have a very long, long, long history of Intel. Matter of fact, I started my career while I was an engineering student at Intel. So that was under Andy Grove. So I hate to see Intel going through this situation, but I think it's like any other problem. You need to address it quickly, and put it behind you. I think the best situation is to address any of those concerns head on, put it behind you and keep moving. Because I, like I said, I don't think this would be a good time for another transition in CEO for Intel. I think we need to at least give Lip-Bu time with his vision and with his strategy to let things play out at Intel.
Yeah, absolutely. Like the thing sort of lost here is that Lip-Bu's been in the country for 40 years. He has had his hand in so many huge companies and has affected so many companies positively, whether through guidance on the board or direct investment. It's kind of hard to imagine the guy has anything nefarious going on that would damage America or Intel. But again, we don't know what's being discussed behind closed doors. But I think all of us are on similar pages, and we have to see how this plays out in the days and weeks ahead. So stay tuned to TechCast. We'll probably discuss this again at some point in the future when there's more news regarding the situation. But while we're talking Intel and potential, you know, government interference in their activities, what about this potential 100% tariff on chips? I'm going to go right back to Jim because I know Jim's passionate about this one. Oh, what do you think about this potential tariff, and does it mean anything?
You know, I hate this topic because we've been addressing it for 20 years. You know, the entire semiconductor ecosystem is global. Matter of fact, you can't produce a chip in one country. You have to, you know, it may be fabbed in one country, it may be tested and assembled and tested in another country, and then it's put into a system. So where do you put the tariff? Are you trying to put the tariff on the system that's being imported? Are you trying to put it on? Because nobody buys chips. No, they buy systems. They buy solutions. So this whole concept is foolish. And not to mention the fact that, you know, and this is probably the one thing that everyone needs to look at, is the fact that the vast majority of chips that are shipped cannot be produced in America because they're on older process nodes. So, you know, you can look at them and say, okay, a processor, you know, or the high-end memory might be produced here. But guess what? All these other components that have to be in these systems are going to be produced on 90 nanometer, 45 nanometer, 65 nanometer, you know, all these older process nodes. And vast majority of all that capacity is outside the U.S. So you're basically almost doubling the cost of producing anything by doing this. And not to mention, like I said, depending on how you implement the tariff, you could be actually be putting a tariff on something multiple times, depending on when it's shipped and where it's shipped to. It's just a foolish, foolish concept. Please, for the love of God, Washington, get out of our industry.
Yeah, and you know, I'm totally on the same page as you, Jim. And you know, over and above that, I think lots of folks don't understand it's the importers that pay the tariff. So yeah, it's a deterrent to perhaps doing business with certain parts of the world, but it's the importer that pays the tariff. It's not some foreign government entity that's throwing money our way.
Actually,
again, totally
the customer. It's the customer that ends up paying. And I'm going to highlight that because Verge Motorcycles, who is an EV startup in Europe, actually announced two new EV motorcycles this week. And one is at $12,000, one's at $13,000. Unless you're in the US, then you have to pay a $1,000 tariff bill on it. So guess what, people? Tariffs are coming.
Exactly. Dave, what do you think of the whole situation? Is it, you think it's going to happen? Is it a bargaining tactic? What's going on with this this latest one?
Yeah, I mean, Trump certainly, you know, in general is using these for bargaining tactics. And you absolutely can see where, you know, it can be effective in certain situations where you talk about, you know, geopolitical situations, you know, with other governments and, you know, reciprocal tariffs where, you know, we've been, you know, getting raked over the coals for too long. And you can see that side of the coin. But Jim hit my trigger, like, you know, I get real triggered when government gets involved in technology. Why? Right. Because a bunch of old fuddy-duddies on Capitol Hill that don't know squat about technology, you know, stick their nose in and mess it up. And so usually it doesn't end well right. in those kinds of situations. You know, and the global nature, as Jim pointed to as well, of the electronics ecosystem is unmistakable. If you know anything about electronics, I mean, we're talking about capacitors, little jelly bean components that you're not going to build many of the certain things here in the US, or at least if you did, it would be a complete loss leader. Or, you know, there's a myriad of reasons, environmental reasons, material reasons. At any rate, I think it's too far. It's going to, you know, not have the intended effect that, you know, I think, you know, the administration's trying to leverage. And that's what these are all about. It's leverage. And so I don't think we have the leverage in that case at all.
Yeah. So Mark, is Dave crazy or are you on the same page?
Well, he's crazy, but it's not about this topic. He's crazy about his baseball allegiance, but he's not crazy about this topic. It's okay. The only couple of pieces that I would offer up is that first and foremost, you know, Tim Cook was at the White House earlier in the week. I'm going to spend $600 billion. You know, if the average person, not guys like us, but the average person who watched that, you'd get the impression that Apple's bringing iPhone manufacturing back to the United States, which is never going to happen, okay, for a whole different reasons. Now, there are some good things that came out of it. I mean, Tim talked about partnering with Corning to build their next generation glass for future iPhones. That's a good deal because that's going to create, you know, manufacturing opportunities. Those are good things. So, but you know, sometimes things get combined and we lose sight of it. And I agree with Dave is that to me, tariffs are a good thing if they can be used in an unconventional manner to force different partners to do things of what you want. For example, Trump, if you believe Trump, you know, he was successful when he was when Pakistan and India was having their little fun with each other earlier in the year. If you believe him, he pretty much said, here's the deal. Okay. If you guys don't make nice with each other, I'm going to, you know, drop a tariff on you for both of your countries for 400% or whatever the number was. And again, that seemed to diffuse the situation. I'm of the opinion that all this tariff stuff is going to be resolved in the next 90 days, because one thing about Trump that I think should be self-evident to most people, he's very transactional. And if he goes into the end of the remainder of the year and the early 2026 with tariffs that start to kick in that are dramatically driving up inflation, that will be a big, big political problem for him. So my guess is that out of self-preservation and for the party, you know, when they have their midterms next year, that's the wonderful thing about democracy. I suspect you're going to say, you know what, maybe we can get closure on this tariff stuff fairly quickly. But you can't do it at the last moment, because if you do it at the last moment, it takes a while. It takes months for that stuff to kick in and then kick out of the system, because the supply chains are so sophisticated and so extended. So I'm, you know, optimistic, shall we say, that a lot of this stuff is going to self-resolve.
Gotcha.
I think so.
With that,
I'm not as optimistic as you guys are. I think the tariffs are, you know, I don't think we've seen, and this isn't just talking about high-tech tariffs, but I think that we're going to start to see more impact the latter half of this year, and especially in 2026, of these tariffs. Like I said, companies, you know, well, let's face it, you know, this has a huge ecosystem impact. You've got companies avoiding and consumers avoiding U.S. products. You've got people avoiding travel to the U.S. You've got prices that are going to go up in the U.S., and you've got U.S. consumers that are scared about this, especially when they start seeing either higher prices or tariff taxes tacked on to some of these high-end products. They're going to stop buying and start avoiding these products. So if this isn't a calamity happening, I don't know what is.
Yeah, lots of potential pitfalls. I'm somewhere in between Mark and Jim here. I think actually between all you guys, it's definitely a bargaining tactic, but some of them will be permanent. Some of them will be reduced. This is all still playing out right in front of us. But with that, if there's nothing else that you guys want to add, I think we should wrap, guys. You guys good on the topic so far for today?
Yeah.
I think so. Right, you know, let me jump in real quick with something Mark said. Mark, I actually sort of applaud the leverage that's trying to be applied with tariffs, you know, in the Apple situation, because, you know, driving businesses to bring it back here if they can, and giving them tax incentive and what have you to do it here, making, you know, the U.S. more viable to do business in, to build and to manufacture in our country. But to me, it would be nice if someday, maybe just like, you know, the car manufacturers do, you know, an iPhone was assembled here in the U.S. I don't know if the economy is a scale, or if the labor rates are going to support that. But somewhere in addition to in the manufacturing chain, if we could make that happen, that'd be cool.
Well,
like a car, you get a sticker on your car that says, you know, 45% of the materials in this car was built in the United States or Mexico.
Well, I would say this, Dave, you know, the U.S. is good at anything that's capital intensive. So if we can do it through machines, we can do it through automation, we can be very, very competitive. The only challenge is we still have to get a lot of those robotics components from overseas. So, so that's a bit of a problem. But I agree. I think that, you know, the more we pull labor out of that issue and automate, the U.S. can be highly competitive.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Yep. We can move on now, Marco. Sorry I pulled this back.
Yeah, you know what? I think with that, we should wrap. I want to thank everybody for watching this latest episode of Tech Stack. And I want to kind of ask everybody watching to like and subscribe. You can find the technologists and these episodes all over the web. We're on YouTube. We're going to be on Spotify, iTunes, SoundCloud. We have a Blue Sky and X account set up. We are building this new property from the ground up, the team that you see here, plus Francis, he's just not with us today. And we would love it if you guys would follow us to keep track of the developments and help grow this into something special. With that, I'm Marco Cipetta from Hot Tech. This was Tech Stack. Thanks for stopping by.